Great. Thank you, Ledge. And now the ultimate question is, Tommy, is whether or not your granddaughter is going to be in cotton diapers. Now that's, you know, that's the ultimate question, if you make that 100% threshold or not. I introduced that to my wife a year ago when we had our first child, and she didn't buy it too much. I want to thank you all for inviting me to present today, especially this project that coming to the conclusion on. It's really been a collaboration between Tim Price and the Southern Cotton Ginners Association, who did most of the financial support for the project, as well as the in-kind support of Tommy as well with the Ag Research Service and the Jenny Koff survey work. I'd also like to recognize my colleague and co-author on the presentation, Dr. Ken Paxton, also from LSU. We know that the ginning industry has been adaptive and robust to changes over the decades, and my feeling is that the current challenges that we face as ginners, as producers, as those that own warehouses and also market our commodity can be effective in managing these types of uncertain times. And so I think that we've been robust, or as we would say in Louisiana, at least the big buzzword now, because we're so much in managing natural disasters on a regular basis, resilient. So I think we as a cotton industry, cotton ginners particularly, can be resilient in the face of these uncertain times. I'm not going to belabor the point about gin numbers and production. You've seen those before. They're in there just as a recognition, as most of us do, about the condition of where we're at. Mid-South cotton production, since that's been the focus, the geographic focus, we focus on this five-state region. We have a recognition in production with the 2008 estimates, at least over this four-year period, where we see the downturns in the 07, the 08 numbers. Our largest percentage drop was for the state of Louisiana with almost 75%. Much of that was compounded by the 2008 issue with Gustav, and amount of flooding, a number of acres that were just unharvestable, and by the way, created problems for our duck hunters because the feds wouldn't allow us to hunt on those fields. They called them baited from lots of different commodities. So those are a little bit of a challenge for those duck hunting. For those of you that weren't in that area, you benefited from having a few more greenheads probably. Or those of you that live north of there, you took care of them before they got our way. Okay. From a magnitude change, the largest reduction amongst the Mid-South states, of course, is Mississippi with around 1.4 million change. The focus of this was to address sort of the structure of the industry, and we had a lot of objectives. What I want to focus today on is taking some of the Jenny Koff's work that we did with Tommy, as well as some on-site visits with ginners, and I see a number of you out there in the audience today, and I appreciate you opening up your gins and your books to be able to look at some of these questions, issues in greater detail. To focus on the economic impacts, looking at the spillovers, looking at the multiplier effects, and to focus today, we do have a larger issue on outlook, looking at structure of ownership, trends going forward that is part of the larger project results and will be provided to Tim and the rest of the Ginning Association, and will likely present some of these in other upcoming meetings, but want to focus on these impacts. So the objectives: collect the ginning cost data. We used the data for the Mid-South gins provided by Tommy. In addition to that, we added a back page of that to ask some additional questions to tease out the information we needed for the impacts. And then some of the on-site visits, we were able to tame a little bit more detail as well to supplement that. Our numbers were up from Tommy's to about 60. We got a few of the on-site visits that had not filled out the original gin survey, so we got to about 25% from a statistical sampling error. That represents about a plus or minus 10% error rate. So when you're looking at gin costs, you're looking at impacts, so well, what's the range on this, how confident? Plus or minus about 10% on the Mid-South wide numbers. That variance increases when we look at state-specific numbers because the sampling size, of course, is smaller. Most of our categories were consistent with Tommy's. A few were slightly different because our objective was a little bit different. We had a few more surveys. He and I differed a little bit in our choice of throwing out of outliers, but they were reasonably close. Lots of numbers here. The Mid-South, South Central, there on the far right. State numbers. Few things to highlight. You can look at the total cost at the bottom. Our lowest cost state appears to be Arkansas. Our highest total cost state appears to be Tennessee. Recognizing that some of this variation is sensitive to sampling, for example, I'll mention that you see a variation from a low of $3.14 per bale on capital improvements to a little over $8.50 for Tennessee. You can have a small number of responses from Tennessee, someone putting in a new gin stand, some investments relative to others that may have not in that given year, and so you have some of that variation. A few other trends, state like Arkansas tended to have lower energy costs, particularly electricity and dryer fuel. A lot of the others were very similar or not too far off in others. I'm not going to belabor a lot of this because I want to get on to the impact analysis and keep us on schedule. Basically, what we're focusing on with economic impact analysis is understand how an initial change in economic activity, whether that's the initial demand for the product or it's the spending by the industry or sector, in this case, spending by the ginning industry, how that changes the overall economic activity of a region, however we define it, whether we define it for five-state Mid-South region, an individual state, an individual county or parish, the entire U.S., that's what we're focusing on. For cotton ginning, our impacts occurs by spending in what we define as three areas, the non-labor material and service inputs, whether they're variable cost or whether they are capital improvement type cost, what we consider our hired labor, that's our full-time labor as well as our seasonal labor, and then what we consider proprietary income, that's sort of gin ownership profits, regardless of whether it's a corporate structure or a proprietor-owned or partnership or co-op. We treat all of that as one category there. What we focus on in this study is measuring output or the spending effects as well as the value added and labor income impacts. Value added basically is the difference between the value of the product sold and the material and service input costs. And so basically they compose employee compensation as well as proprietor income. And then a couple of small things in terms of property type income and some business taxes. The labor income is strictly focused on employee compensation and proprietor income. Okay? And so we use these to generate spending multipliers and industry-wide multipliers. And it's important to recognize the difference between these two as we go forward in the slides. And I'm going to try to give you that interpretation so you know the context of each as we move forward. Okay. These are the Mid-South wide cotton gin impacts. These are by aggregate category, that is the non-labor, and then I combine labor and proprietary together. And these are in $2,007 from last year. Okay? The direct column represents the direct effects. These are effects that are from the percent of spending by your gins, or at least of the Mid-South gins that occur within the Mid-South region. So that means if you're a Mid-South gin, one of the five states, and you purchase inputs, whether they be sheet metal, whether they be some type of contract labor, whether you hire someone from that Mid-South area, that's included in that. That totaled just over $258 million, so a quarter of a billion. The total, which includes the multiplier spinoff effects, exceeds $438 million, so we're looking at just under a half a billion. Okay, what you see over to the right are what we call spending multipliers. So these represent what the multiplier effect is for local spending, not your total spending, but your local spending within the five-state region. And so the 1.69 is basically interpreted for a $1 increase in your local spending. There's a total change in output across all sectors of the Mid-South economy, not just the ginning or ag sector, of $1.69. The original dollar of spending plus another 69 cents of additional spending activity. Okay? You also see in terms of value added, direct effect, a little over $133 million, just under a quarter of a billion from total effects, okay? And then labor income, a little over $76 million and $130 million. When we look at Mid-South-wide cotton gin impacts from detailed categories, and these numbers are small, you'll be able to pull these up online for records. Basically, your totals replicate what the totals were in the previous slide here, but they break them down by T-tail industry sector of the five-state Mid-South economy. Of course, you see the largest sector that's impacted is manufacturing. I mean, when we think about and going around these on-site visits, they say, boy, these gins are just money holes. They just keep putting more money in there for repair and maintenance and improvements and such. Well, a lot of that's manufactured goods, whether you're buying them direct from the manufacturer or if you're buying them through someone else in a retail or wholesale situation. A little over of the direct effects, a little over $150 million, in excess of over half of it, is in the manufacturing sector. The next largest, which is much smaller, is transportation and warehousing. And a lot of that has to do with not warehousing of ginned cotton, because that's forward in the supply chain. We're just looking backward. Is focused on such things as the transportation issues of moving these manufactured goods to retailers, to you, as well as the spending of households, the incomes that are earned, the spending on transportation-related items by households, and so that is included. So you see all of those. We also have these broken out that'll be in the report by each of the respective states. State-specific cotton gin output effects, okay? So this looks at your state-specific effects. One thing that should be noted is that the first main finding here is that the states that have more overall cotton production tend to have more greater total effects. Now, if you want to say, okay, well, let's say my state wasn't one of the largest producers, how strong is it given the amount that we produce? And the better approach to evaluate the local spending multiplier. Same interpretation as before, but just for your state. So it's the amount of spending in your individual state and the effect it has in additional spending in all other sectors for your state. You see those run from 1.45 to 1.65. Question may be asked, why do we see this variation? A lot of it has to do with some issues. Like, for example, Tennessee has a lot of gin suppliers locally, and so a lot of you in the Mid-South region, regardless of which state you're in, purchase a lot of gin supplies from vendors in that area. And so as a result, if you're a Tennessee ginner, that represents in-state spending. If you are not from Tennessee, it's an out-of-state spending. It's considered a leakage, so that doesn't come back into your economy directly. Likewise, a state like Missouri has a lot of local linkages, and it's a larger overall state economy, similar to Tennessee, and so a lot of spending on items that you wouldn't normally consider would have local effects do have. I think Missouri had a case where a lot of its energy was coming from in-state suppliers. I know in particular their natural gas. I think Ameren UE was one of their big suppliers, and it's an in-state producer, so that's a linkage. Whereas for some of those that are large multi-state electric companies, a lot of those were leakages. Okay, let's come to an ending point and talk a little bit about the industry multiplier, okay? And this is important. The local spending multipliers just look at how your local spending occurs. But if we want to look at a gin industry-wide multiplier, something that you can talk a little bit more about, that is this number here, and it's 2.39. What it means is for a dollar increase in your Mid-South cotton ginning service activity, there's a total increase in output across all sectors of $2.39. The original dollar plus another additional $1.39 in spending. Remember, this is just for the ginning industry. One of the questions that I always get asked is that, you know, well, I heard the multiplier for cotton or corn or soybeans was 7 or 10 or 15 or 25. I saw someone do an ethanol study and said the multiplier was 31. And, man, I wanted to use so many four-letter words I couldn't control myself. But nevertheless, it's just this small part. If we want to talk a little bit more about the overall cotton supply chain, we have to add the spinning effects from each of the pieces. So from the production side, to the ginning side, to the warehousing side, to the marketing side. Adding all of those together would give us the magic cotton supply chain multiplier, okay? We didn't have enough dollars to look at all those elements, and we were focused on ginning, so we did that. One of the things I did go back and look at was from some previous studies and models that I looked at, and looked at farm production of cotton and sort of combining the cotton production with the ginning multiplier, and so I got a number in and around 3. So if you look at just at those areas, we've got multipliers that are around 3, okay? And so when you add warehousing, when you add marketing, you're going to be expanding to that number as well. Now, I can't tell you what that would be because I haven't looked at it close enough, hadn't seen enough of those studies. You get into marketing, you're talking about a much smaller numbers game in terms of marketers, and a lot more proprietary information is more difficult to obtain. Final observations, I wanted to talk about some of the on-site visits. Measurable variation in types of seasonal labor use, from mostly migrant labor to local residents to inmate labor. And that may be some of the reason, Tommy, that you're getting some low Mid-South numbers, is that one of the things I found from the upper part of the Mid-South, there was a lot of migrant labor. When you got to the middle part with these on-site visits, it was about 50-50. Then you got into the further south, especially in Louisiana, there was a lot of inmate labor that was being used. Individual parishes had different relationships with their sheriffs, and so on, work released relationships. Granted, you still had to pay them, and you have to pay them minimum wage and certain types of benefits, but somehow that may be playing into some of that. It's just a hypothesis. Forward contracting seemed to be common for at least a measurable percentage of tonnage, 40 to 70. Those who are on the 70% side, that was mostly resulting in the 2007 season of them ginning fewer bales and so than they anticipated, and so their contracted amounts were up higher than what they expected when they did the initial contracts. A few issues for the future. In conclusion, need to manage the continued short-term production declines. We need to strengthen the gin scene and other co-product marketing activities. See a lot of that quality occurring within the on-site visit, some innovative things occurring. Find strategies to maintain and train new gin managers. Seem like the most valuable asset in all these on-site gin visits. A lot of knowledge there, but also a lot of gray hair too. So that's something that needs to be recognized by the industry. And some long-term strategies for obtaining and preserving cotton farmers' gin business. It seemed like that the ginners that focused more less on what they could do to get acreage in a single year, but focused on developing a long-term relationships with cotton farmers, tended to lose fewer bales from year to year because they were able to maintain, even when that farmer grew less, they were able to keep that, and they were not picked off by a neighboring gin that may have offered for a year a higher gin seed rebate or something. So that's something to think about. The other final thing I point was, have the gin ownership plant more cotton. I saw gin after gin in the on-site visits, those that had these cooperative gins. And I understand the situation where you have market conditions suggesting maybe if you're a multi-commodity producer, but I mean, I saw gin manager after gin manager show me, okay, this is a list, and let's say I've got 15 or I've got 20 owners, and they were picking off 25 and 30% plus, in many cases, of their gin, of their owners that didn't plant or have the land that they owned planted in cotton at all, and so they were getting zero acreage from them. So much of the, I found it ironic, much of the reduced acreage is a function of the owners not planting any cotton themselves. So sometimes they have to look in our own face, but granted, we also have to look at what we can make from those other commodities too. So I'll wrap it up there. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask me. I'll be glad to send this, and of course this information's up online as well. Thank you.